You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto. We are glad you are joining us this fine Wednesday evening. How are you doing, Art?
I'm doing well, thank you.
That, of course, is the dulcet tones of Art Factor, a producer extraordinaire.
Who will also be emceeing the outdoor stage at the BC Home and Garden Show this weekend.
And you're getting texts
Friday.
Like crazy coming in there. So you're a popular
guy.
Friday, the BC Home and Garden Show.
Yeah, I'll be.
I didn't know you were a home and garden guy.
I'm not. I'm a barbecue guy, though. I like.
I'm a barbecue guy. Are you a better barbecuer than me?
I'm a pretty good
barbecuer.
I'm a taster, not a cooker necessarily.
I cook.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm awesome. My beer can chicken, legendary.
Well, I can tell you whether or not yours is competition worthy.
I don't think food is something you should compete with. It's like fishing. My passion is fly fishing and cooking, and I don't see the point in competing in those areas. I compete enough in my life in day-to-day other activities. I don't really want to compete. You know, it's good food or it's not. I don't want it to be better or worse than somebody else's. I'm sorry, it's a philosophical chasm that we won't be able to cross.
It might take you to the next level, Steve.
No, you know what? I'm happy to learn, and if something tastes better than mine, that's fine. I just don't need you pointing that out, per se. I will understand it, and then okay. I will make modifications. And even so, it's a subjective thing. You know, what you consider better tasting might not be what I consider better tasting.
That is true.
How did you learn to cook? You didn't learn to cook then.
No, I know how to cook. I met some people who were in the competitive barbecue circuit. There's a circuit.
Yeah, I know. I've watched them on TV.
And they asked me one time to be a judge, and that one time has turned into five competitions.
Well, judging might not be bad because I get to just eat the food.
That's awesome.
I don't like having to actually disappoint people by rating it, but I might be able to do that just to eat the food. Can I get on as a judge? Am I a big enough celebrity?
Absolutely. I know people, Steve.
Is it this too late for this weekend?
Yes.
Oh, no.
There's now going to be four competitions in BC over this season. Season starts next month.
Okay, well, you put my name in, and I will see if I can come out. But I can't eat a lot of carbs. I'm trying to cut back on the carbs.
It's all meat. Don't worry about the carbs.
It's all meat. It's all, sort of like our show today. It's all meat, no carbs.
Yes, no filler.
This is technology. Let's fill the folks in on what we're going to be talking about. We're going to top off the show today. We've got joining us is going to be Lindsay Pinto from the openmedia.ca. She's going to be in to talk to us. And Gillian Shaw from the Vancouver Sun is going to be joining us. There's big issues over Spill C30. We'll be talking about that. And then hopefully Gillian's going to stay on and chat with me about some just other cool tech stuff. We have Elvis Burson in. He is the fellow who was on a couple of months ago from Chillbeds. He was on Dragon's Den. So he's going to fill us in on his experience on Dragon's Den, which I'm looking forward to. He pitched his products to the Dragons. We'll see how they.
Is there a millionaire in our green room? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think there's any millionaires in our green room right now. So we've got a great show lined up. Stick around for more DottoTech in just a few seconds. Joining me in studio now from the Vancouver Sun, their digital life reporter, Gillian Shaw. How are you doing, Gillian?
Hi, Steve.
Thanks for coming in. And we are going to start things off today by dealing with, I think, what is a huge issue, which is this Bill C-30, which most of the country, I don't know how much attention the general public is paying to it, but they should be paying a lot. And to help us along the way, another regular guest on this show, we have Lindsay Pinto from openmedia.ca. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good. So so let's begin with you, Lindsay, and talk about what is Bill C-30 and why should we be concerned with it?
Well, essentially, Bill C-30 is a new bill that amends the criminal code. It's a bill that would allow for warrantless electronic surveillance of Canadians' online activities. So essentially, it would give authorities like the police or CSIS access to people's name, information, address, email, phone number, an IP address, which kind of unlocks the key to your browsing history and your communications history, all without court oversight. So this is really just an expansion of surveillance powers So, of course, we at openmedia.ca are very concerned about that, and we've launched a petition, and there's been a great deal of citizen outcry, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
I guess so. So this is akin, this is like a parent saying, I get to look at everything that happens on your computer.
Kind of like that, yeah. No, it's definitely one of those authorities looking over your shoulder, making sure, and really this targets the online activities of any Canadian at any time, looking where the government could be looking over their shoulder, authorities could be looking over, seeing what they are doing online and making assessments based on that. And this is all while removing safeguards and deterrence from abuse that we usually expect in criminal code amendments.
Jillian, this is Canada. Is this, yeah, even in the States, they aren't trying to create quite this draconian...
How'd we just wake up in China, Steve? I don't know. Or Syria?
Yeah.
I don't know that ordinary, ordinary folk who aren't on the internet all the time, I mean, people like you, me, Lindsay, we're online kind of people, so we realize the importance of privacy, but I walked out of a press conference with Vancouver police yesterday where they came out in support, not surprisingly, yes, of this bill. And I ran into somebody I knew who was just happened to be, going by. And he said, what were you doing? I said, well, I was there about this Bill C-30. And he said, yeah, that, I don't know. I can't hard to know what to think about that. But I guess if the police just walked into our house and started opening drawers and looking in cupboards, we'd have a problem with it. I think that pretty much summarizes it.
And because, in my mind, when I think about this, goes to so many different places, so many different things are attached to our IP address. If they know our IP address, then they know what devices we are accessing the internet most often with. So they would then be able to figure out, I imagine it would be a very small leap to figure out the electronic code of your phone, in which case they could then start following people around just by where their phone is logging on to different Wi-Fi networks, et cetera, and that sort of stuff. It's more power than we should be giving any one group.
You see, I don't think that we realize how much information they are giving away, and the conservative government and the police like to say, well, we're really only getting what you'd find anyway in a phone book. No, this is like going through the phone book and then listening in on all your calls. It takes it such a further step, because once, as Lindsay said and you say, once you have somebody's IP address, you can start then piecing together information, and you can find out who they're contacting, where they're showing up. An example was given to me by security expert Christopher Parsons over at University of Victoria, which really hit home for me, because we in the newspaper we're a website. We have people come and comment on our blogs, and in particular, we have a crime blog written by Kim Bolan. A lot of people are on there. Supposedly anonymously, they have to register with us, but they're not writing under their own name. Mm-hmm. Under this legislation, the police could come to us and say, we want all the information that you have on this person, Fred Flyby-Night gangster who's written a comment on this blog. And then they could then take that information. And so now they've taken the pseudonym, which is, possibly linked to a phone number and an address. They can go to the ISP, so whether their ISP is TELUS or Shaw, and then get more information and say...
And they can attach all this circumstantial evidence
exactly,
to this person.
Exactly. And now they have a pseudonym, they have the real name, they have a phone number, they have an address. You can learn a lot. And then you go on to the web and... It's not a couple of cops sitting in a back room, surfing, Googling your name.
Yeah.
No, it's very sophisticated tracking software.
So, Lindsay, where did this suddenly come from? How did Bill C-30 all of a sudden become so far-reaching and so, draconian is the only word I can, but so severe?
Well, this kind of legislation has actually been around for a long, long time. In 2002, I believe, the Liberal Party introduced it into the House, and during the election there, it died on the order paper. And again, the Conservatives introduced it, and it died when Parliament was prorogued, and they introduced it again right before the last election. And it, of course, once again, died on the order paper. this time we have a conservative majority government, it seems unlikely that they'll prorogue Parliament again, although I'm sure that would be a terribly popular move. We'll probably see for the first time this bill actually making its way through all of the legislative steps in the House of Commons and in the Senate. What is really interesting, though, is that this bill has become so unpopular and there's been so much outcry around it because it's been introduced so many times, and Canadians are getting increasingly familiar with this abuse, and because, you know, we saw this coming from their election time promises. Canadians have been able to kind of rile up a charge. Over 80,000 people had signed by the time the bills were even introduced at stopspying.ca, our petition. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I mean, we're seeing a lot more attention given to these bills and these bills making their way towards committee where amendments could possibly be made if the Conservatives truly are listening.
So how many people is it going to take for them to listen? Right now you have over 100,000 people who have signed up. What Open Media does better than anybody in the world is they get Canadians to sign up for things. You guys are the king of the sign up things group. And so you've got well over 100,000 people so far that have said, let's stop spying and kind of put their name on this online petition. What's the number that's going to make these people start to take notice?
You know, it's hard to say. It's definitely, I mean, it's a high number on the Stop Online Spying petition, making sure we hit major milestones and making sure people are paying attention when that is the case. But it's also things like we asked our supporters, for example, to spread the word and to stick to social media. And we saw things like them using hashtags, which are essentially ways of categorizing your tweets, like the one Tell Vic Everything, in which they just tweet mundane details of their personal lives at Vic Taves' Twitter account and just kind of draw attention to the fact that these bills are really invasive and really excessive. And we've also seen, you know, other kinds of social media activities and online engagement activities targeted at the public safety minister and the Conservatives in general, essentially making sure that they know that Canadians are paying attention, that we're engaged, that we are outraged, and that we're going to continue to stand behind one message, which is really to stop online spying, that this is not an appropriate use of legislative power.
This could... Now, I just can't see me living in a country where this bill is going to go through. So I've got faith that it's going to be stopped. I have to believe that we're going to be able to stop it. You know, it just makes no sense to me that anybody that I know would agree to this. But having said that, there might be a little bit of a silver lining in all of this, and the fact that Canadians are going to become increasingly aware through this dialogue of the importance of privacy online and how they should be protecting their information, and just that they are the ones responsible for their online presence and for anything that they share online. They have to be comfortable with what they are putting on the internet. So that's the one kind of positive spin that I guess we can put on this whole thing.
Yeah, it's always really interesting to see Canadians get more and more involved in the policymaking process and engage with completely different levels of discourse, everything from, you know, privacy law pieces being published to you know, funny tweets about pancakes. We're really seeing people level the playing field between the everyday person and the politician, and that's a huge step forward for where we want our policymaking process to be.
Well, this is a story we're going to have to watch for some time. So give me a timeline. What is the next couple of months look like as far as this issue goes? Are we reaching a crucial point where that we have to pay even more immediate attention?
Well, we need to definitely keep the pressure on and strike while the iron's hot. Make sure that Canadians stay engaged, stay informed, that you're telling, you know, everybody you know about these horrible bills, and that we're not going to forget if the government decides to do some kind of tactic along the lines of delaying it as much as they can. The bills are set to go to committee, where Harper and Taves have both said that they are willing to entertain amendments to the bill, and entertain was not really the right word to use there, in my opinion, but they will listen to those and hopefully make some meaningful changes that will allow for things like court oversight, which we would really, really want, and or scrap the bills altogether. So really it's just a matter of keeping the pressure on, keeping the heat up, and watching to see what happens and making sure that the Conservatives know that we are still engaged, we are still listening.
Yeah, see, I don't really have any problem with the police being able to look at some point at and try and gain information on me if they suspect I've done something wrong, and if there's oversight, if there's a court or somebody that they have to go to and say, this is the reason this is a bad guy, we want to follow him, we want to gain these records. I've got no issues with that as a fairly conservative adult. Others can, and I certainly respect others who might even disagree with that level. But this business of them being able to do it without any oversight whatsoever, that is terrifying.
Absolutely, and especially because there's been no need for these bills shown. I mean, we already have provisions for if they think you are a criminal, they can go out and get a warrant.
Yes.
If it's an emergency situation, there are provisions in place for them to take emergency actions. Those provisions have never, not once, been shown to have fallen short and then shown to have impeded a criminal investigation. They've been scrambling to find examples, and they've yet been unable to. So really, this bill is a solution in search of a problem. It's hugely problematic, and it's this kind of expansion is unprecedented and not worthy of a country like Canada.
And the invitation for abuse, having that much ability to be able to gain that much information on anybody else, just invites terrible, terrible abuse all the way downstream. So it does have to be stopped. So give us our marching orders now, Ms. Pinto. First of all, we have to go to stopspying.ca and sign up for the petition. So you
Absolutely.
have to put your name behind the rest of the more than 100,000 strong Canadians who say this is wrong. Secondly, you got to go to Facebook and like openmedia.ca because that gives you some extra chutzpah. What's the third thing? I know you want to send you money, but I'm not going to recommend anybody do that. You can say that, though.
No, we'd love people to like us on Facebook.
Like it on Facebook. What else
do we have more fans than Stephen Harper, so we're really proud of that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know how hard that is, Lindsay.
Is there anything, other than informing, reading about it and signing the petitions, is there anything else that the general public should be doing?
Email your MPs, write to your MPs, and make sure you tell your family, your friends, your neighbor, your grandmother, your boss, anybody who is interested in the future of this country or in the future of their personal privacy or even in the future of the digital economy. I mean, I haven't added yet that these bills are going to cost a whole bunch to implement. So, just keep on spreading the word because really together is how we have our strength.
Yes, and not to mention that if they go through it, they will become an impediment to the digital economy because people will have to retreat from the online world.
Absolutely.
I mean, ultimately you'll have to do that. Jillian, anything to add?
Well, I think you have to be just really careful and looking ahead and don't be put off by, I mean, the favorite argument of both the lobby for this and the police is kind of don't worry your pretty little head about it. It's way too technical for you. Well, no. There are experts, security experts, privacy experts who do know the details and do know exactly how this works. So I think they're just putting a spin on it. I just don't.
Saying it's technically beyond us, that's not acceptable. So we will stay on top of it. Lindsay, you're going to be our go-to person. We'll be back in touch with you as we progress on this. But we will all the links to your site and your to-do list will be posted on our site.
Right. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thanks, Lindsay and Jillian. You're going to stick around?
I'll stick around. Bye, Lindsay.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and return with more of DottoTech in just a few seconds.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Back to Steve, indeed. Back to Steve and Jillian Shaw, who has one of the coolest jobs on the planet. She gets to just write about technology. That's not a bad thing to have to do for the Vancouver Sun.
Yeah, you will not hear complaints from me, Steve.
I didn't expect. Now, you asked me a question just as we were on break. You asked me if I'm nomophobic. What is nomophobic?
Nomophobic. Well, Steve, have you ever lost or misplaced your cell phone, like under the couch cushions, and you know you get that, your heart starts pounding, your stomach clenches,
worse.
And you start to hyperventilate?
I dropped my BlackBerry in a toilet once in Los Angeles.
Nomophobic.
But nomophobic, the fear of not having my cell phone.
The fear of not having
the fear of embarrassing yourself on radio is what we should have here. But yes, it was one of the worst. Well, it spawned one of the funniest moments of my life as I walked out and my partner says to me, I said, I just dropped my BlackBerry on the toilet. And she says to me, did you wash your hands? Which I thought was outstanding. But it was a brutal feeling being without my phone. I felt disconnected. And I can understand that it is. For people that leave their phone at home, I can understand why you turn the car around, even though it's inconvenient, go home and get your phone because, yeah, you shouldn't be without it.
Well, and apparently... they should change it, really, Steve. I think we should change it to phonophobic.
Okay. It might solve.
Yeah, then I might not stumble over my, stumble over my phobias. But
yes.
Apparently, you're more likely to be nomophobic if you're young. And if anybody's had a teenager and you know they lose phones, once a weekend? So that, no wonder they're nomophobic. And you can't live without a phone if you're 16 years old. And then women, interestingly, are apparently more nomophobic.
The Rogers Innovation people just did a study, which we're going to talk about in an upcoming episode, but they did a study on how committed you are to your tech, how important technology is in your life. And the thing that shocked me out of that entire study was women are more engaged with their technology than men. They are more reliant on their technology than men. And I was flabbergasted by that.
Well, it's not surprising, Steve. We do so much more.
So I'm going to reverse
the technology.
Turn around. Are you nomophobic, Miss Gillian Shaw?
Do you know, I have, apparently if you have two phones, you're supposed to be slightly less nomophobic.
Because you always have a backup.
But no, I have two phones and I spend half my day. Apparently you check your phone 34 times a day. I think I check my phone 34 times an hour at least.
So you are nomophobic.
Yeah, I'm a serious nomophobe.
Art, are you nomophobic?
Oh, I'm petrified when I forget my phone at home.
Yeah, and I am too. So there's three nomophobes here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that's necessarily a bad thing. It's not like other phobias that are bad, like fear of flags and stuff.
I think there's going to be a whole new counseling stream going for this. I got to tell you, Steve.
Okay, well let's continue on the phone theme. I've been playing with last week we had Paul DeMera on the show. We talked about Rogers One. I am a Rogers subscriber, so I signed up for Rogers One immediately after our interview, and I am loving it. Have you tried it, Jillian?
Call me and talk. Let's talk about it on Rogers One.
Do you like it?
Yeah, what is really interesting that Rogers has done here, and I'm sure that the other companies are going to follow, because people are giving up their landlines.
Mm-hmm.
An increasing number of people are giving up their landlines. This year, I think it's 15% of Canadian households went wireless only.
Mm-hmm.
And next year, that's expected to climb to 18%. And of course,
I am wireless. I've been wireless
only
for over 3 years.
Oh, well, you're well into that. So you've contributed to those numbers, Steve. So the thing is, I mean, what do you find when you're at home making calls or long distance calls? You must have some other system, because if you start running up your wireless number all the time, it can be pricey.
I would use, in the past, I would use, primarily I would use Skype.
Exactly. Yeah. So is Rogers One has stepped into this kind of hybrid where your cell phone now becomes a home phone, because when you walk in the door, you're on your Wi-Fi network seamlessly.
Yeah. Yes.
And all of a sudden the meter stops ticking, and so it's now you're on free calls.
So for people that don't know what the Rogers One number, that didn't listen last week, when you install, if you're a Rogers subscriber, and the other telcos, so they're going to have to get on board this. And this is actually technology. A listener wrote to me. This came out of Nortel. This is one of the Nortel technologies that they developed. So when you're a Rogers subscriber, you sign up for one number, you install a small little app on your computer, which then causes your computer through its web browser interface to ring simultaneously with your phone ringing. So if Jillian phones me and I'm sitting at my computer rings and a little message comes up saying Jillian Shaw, the caller ID comes up, and I can answer it there on my computer. At the same time, my phone is ringing and saying Jillian Shaw is calling. So if I answer my phone, then the minutes count against my mobility plan. But if I answer it on my computer, the minutes don't count. What surprised me is the quality of the call on my computer. Now, I've got a couple of different audio options on my computer, and one of them is just a simple Logitech USB headset, which I use for Skype primarily. And so that's where the calls come through. The quality is spectacular. It's so much better than Skype.
Yeah, it is the way to go. And certainly, I mean, there are all kinds of little, there are hybrids. I think one of the markets is going to kill is all those little devices that you can plug in at home to make your long distance calls, to turn your, well, when the wireless.
The advantages of the world, the NetTalk, all the different VoIP services.
When the wireless carriers get into this space, they have a lot of clout, and everybody, of course, as we know, because we're all nomophobic, have our wireless phones. So that's they're going to be making big inroads in that market.
Well, and from the mobility carrier's business perspective, I can see why they're moving to this model, because I think it's going to cost them some revenue. Because people are going to spend a little bit less money on their minutes, but it's going to encourage some loyalty, I think, because now probably the biggest reason people switch carriers is they're frustrated with their bills being their overage on the bills. So the cell carriers probably don't want you to have actually that massive amount of minutes and suddenly have a, you know, bad karma with them. So by controlling the minutes, by all of the phone calls you make on your computer are free. The long-distance calls are free within Canada. As long as you're calling on your computer, those are all free calls. So they're going to give up something on the minutes. But on the other side, they're going to gain a lot of loyalty. Because where's the growth in the market going to come from? It's only kids now. All the adults have cell phones. You know, the market is now saturated. So the growth has to come from people switching, which is very expensive to get people to switch, or from that small group of kids coming up into the marketplace, but they're not typically buying the Bells, the Telus, the Rogers, the high-end accounts. They're buying the Winds and the Kudos and the Virgin
really
Bubbles,
the
lower-cost carriers. Yeah. So they now have to start building some loyalty. And I tell you, the Rogers One number for me, it's building some loyalty.
And
I like it.
And it costs a lot when you lose a customer. The churn in the cell phone companies, that's the worst for them. So if you can, you're exactly right. If you can give customers a service that makes them want to stay, you've won half the battle.
And you know what? We've run out of time because we went so long on the open media thing. We're up against the clock. So we're gonna have to talk about LTE modems at another point.
Well,
but
I mean,
am playing with the LTE.
I can't stumble over any more words then, Steve.
Although I did see one rumor in the rumor mill today that the new iPad 3 might have LTE in it.
Oh, I fully expect so. I'm
liking the speed. It's not bad. Jillian Shaw, you can find all of her good works at her blog at the Vancouver Sun, a digital life column, and she, of course, writes lots of feature-length articles. And she's, if you keep up, she will be talking a lot about Bill C-30 in the coming weeks. That's something we can all look forward to. Thanks for coming in, Jillian.
Thanks, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
It is indeed time for MacTech. Rick Yeager is my MacTech dude. How are we doing, Rick?
We're doing good. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. Now, I gave you an assignment this week because I am increasingly just using my iPad as a notebook replacement. I'm not sure I'm ever going to buy another. Well, I am going to buy another notebook. But
me too.
But so often now, I've gone on some road trips where I'm just taking my iPad.
Yeah, me too.
And it's a notebook replacement. It's what goes into meetings with me. So what things should the average person think about if they're going to use their iPad as a notebook replacement?
Are you a typist?
I don't mind the on-screen keyboard, but I have used some of the Bluetooth attachment keyboards, and I like them.
Yeah, I just got one. My should I say how old my mom is?
You can say how old.
70-ish year old mother. I got her an iPad for her birthday last year.
Mm-hmm.
And for Christmas, I gave her one of these Bluetooth keyboards that locks into the iPad as a case.
Yes.
So these keyboard case dealies.
I've got a Logitech one that does that. It's a butterfly keyboard that rolls out. Really nice.
Very nice. She got the Zag one.
Yes, Zag.
It kind of locks it in, and it basically protects the keyboard protects the screen with the keyboard.
With the back of the keyboard, yeah.
Right. And those are great. They're about $100. There's the one that I like the look of the most isn't available in Canada. The Casemate. And it makes your iPad look exactly like a laptop.
Oh, okay.
It makes has it a hinge in it. It's
now, how does your mom like using the keyboard?
Well, that was a bad gift.
Okay. So it's one that you've reacquired for your own personal
use? Well, not yet. But she
never used a computer before the iPad, and that's why I'm so excited about the iPad in general, is that I think this is the computer. They always said the Mac was the computer for the rest of us, but I think the iPad is really the computer for all of us because it's so simplified. It just works.
Yeah. Well, I think increasingly over the next few years, we're going to see the reason that it's going to be, it's going to continue to change the world, it and other tablets, is education, because ultimately this has to be the tool that just resonates right through education. And as we move towards the dream of having every kid with one of these in their backpack instead of a whole bunch of textbooks, that just changes everything.
Or a whole bunch of laptops.
Yes.
So
yeah.
My next
tool. So first one is getting a good Bluetooth keyboard, and it does make a difference if you're a typist.
If you're a typist,
And I, because I've always looked down at my keyboard as I type because I never learned to touch type properly, I'm actually pretty good in the on-screen keyboard. So I can actually enter data pretty well.
Yeah. I've only got two fingers that know how to type. So.
Yeah. So there we go. And I'm pretty fast with it. I use 4 or 5, but I'm pretty fast.
Okay. My next recommendation are the iApps, the Pages, Keynote, Numbers. You're going to spend about $30 all told for it, but if you don't need all of them, don't buy all of them.
Yes.
So if you're not going to make any, you know, pseudo PowerPoint presentations on your iPad, just stick with Pages, which is Apple's word processor. Numbers is its spreadsheet, and Keynote is its PowerPoint slide presentation. You could use Google Docs, which are free, but I find it kind of clunky on the iOS apps.
The problem with the Google Docs and when you're running them on the mobile device is Google's servers look to you, first of all, as a mobile platform, and so they look at they send you the mobile version. Mm-hmm. And going into editing, you have to kind of convert over to desktop version before you can actually get in and edit very comfortably. Because one thing that the iPad is not good at doing is doing things like selecting text if that text isn't readily available to it.
Right.
It's cumbersome to explain, but the bottom line is you're far better off using the notepad feature, the notes in it, or using something like
for sure.
Pages. Yeah.
And there's also Documents to Go Premium, which is a $17 app that allows you to open up doc files and like legitimate Microsoft
Excel files. Yeah.
Microsoft.
So if you
Office
live
files.
In a world where you are using Office an awful lot, then Documents to Go is almost an essential.
It is. It is. It's one of the first.
If you want to be apps, able to edit those documents.
Right. It's one of the first apps that most business users will download. My next choice is another easy one: Dropbox.
Oh yeah.
If you want to get large files in and out of your iPad. It's the only way to do it. There's just no way to email big things back and forth.
Yeah.
And this just, it's a cloud service that creates, I think of it as like this wormhole folder that connects you not only to the cloud, but to all your other devices. Whatever you put in there just goes everywhere.
And you can try Dropbox out for free. I think they include 5 gigabytes of free storage. Is it 2 gigabytes? A couple of gigabytes of free storage, and then you can purchase more storage. And if you recommend friends, I think they give you more free storage as well. But the bottom line is Dropbox is, and to me, it's one of the holes in the whole iPad offering of iOS 5 is the fact it's so awkward and cumbersome to get files onto the iPad. I can remember when I first got my iPad, I was disappointed. It took me, I think I spent like half an hour in iTunes thinking there must be a way for me to move a document on, because I wanted to move my first keynote presentation onto it, and I literally had to go online and learn how to do this in order to. This was back in the early days when it had just been released, but still, I always thought that we should be able to manage our files through iTunes as opposed to requiring a cloud service. I know why Apple did it to a certain extent, but I don't agree with it.
Right. And you and I have the Apple mindset of Apple wouldn't make it this hard. It can't be this way. I must be going down the wrong way.
That's what they did. And that to me is the biggest limitation of the iPad as a notebook replacement, if I'm going to do it, is getting files in and out other than as attachments or using Dropbox.
And Dropbox is the easiest solution for me.
Yes.
Give it a try.
As opposed to just accessing that memory space, which is the way it should be.
Right.
Okay. So that's a good advice. Dropbox. What's next?
Log Me In.
Yes, I've got that.
Log Me In is a trippy thing to explain on the radio, but basically you're going to get a Log Me In account and you're going to install it on your desktop PC or Mac, on your iPhone or iPad. And you will go on your iPad, you will log in to Log Me In, you will tell it you want to control your Mac, and suddenly your Mac's desktop screen will appear on your iPad.
Yeah, it's actually on the iPad. It's called Log Me In Ignition. Is the actual app that you install?
Right, that's the big expensive one.
There that's the one that I have. Oh, is there a free version?
There is a free version. Oh. It's somewhat limited, but give it a try before you spend the big bucks.
So what it does is it allows you basically machine control of your computer at a distance. So you're in a hotel room and you want to log on to your computer, and this is a way that you can go in and you can open files, you can check email, you can maintain your computer, you can shut it down if you want to, you can do all sorts of, you can open your email client on your computer and send a file from your computer to yourself. It's pretty, but it's slow. It's not fast.
It's slow, but what I've used it for is, well, we said that Dropbox allows you to share files back and forth, but how do you get that file if it's not in your Dropbox folder on your desktop computer?
Yeah, when you're on the road.
You're on the road.
Exactly.
This will allow you to do that. You can drop it right in that folder and it'll sync.
So is that the last tool?
That's the last one.
Okay, so convert. If you are bound and determined to try and use your iPad as a desktop replacement, our recommended list of items are A, a Bluetooth keyboard, B, all of the iApps that are appropriate for you, C, Dropbox, D,
Log Me In,
and the last one is opening the Windows apps.
That was Documents to Go.
Documents to Go, and that will give you basically for like maybe $200 total investment, that will turn your iPad pretty much into a notebook.
Magically
computer.
Convert it.
Thank you very much. Rick Yeager is with
AppMan.tv.
That's the name. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Mac Tech is brought to you by MacStation, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. MacStation, who said business and pleasure don't mix?
Adam Benson is joining me right now. He is the president, CEO, chief cook and bottle washer at Chillbed, the laptop cooling guys, and also stands for our iPad. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing very well, Steve. Thank you.
Now, you were on the show, 6-7 months ago, and bottom line, you guys build cooling stands for notebooks and also stands for iPads.
That's correct. Laptops, cooling stands, and tablet stands as well.
So the key thing for the for listeners is that the notebook cooling stands are a really good idea. They're made out of aluminum, and they basically prop your notebook up at a slightly better angle, but the main thing is they reduce the amount of heat that the notebook, or they dissipate the heat to keep the notebook running cooler.
That's correct. Absorbing, dissipating the heat is the main function of the chill bed, as well as ergonomic design, and basically allows you to type at a comfortable angle, allowing air to flow underneath your chill bed as well, and your laptop, and basically absorbing and dissipating the heat, working as a heat sink, thermal conductivity.
So you guys are a nice startup and based in Vancouver. You build the products here and you sell them in Canada, but you like every good Canadian. If you can't get in the NHL, the second big dream for us all is to be on Dragon's Den, and that's why you're back. You started down the journey, and you were just engaged in it last time I talked to you, as you were going through the audition process to Dragon's Den, and you're here to fill me in on how everything went.
I'm here to tell all the secrets, Steve. What do you want to know?
Well, first of all, how did you get on in the first place? Did you go to one of the cattle call auditions, or how did it work out?
Prior to one of the cattle call auditions, I had entered a online video contest through CBC Facebook.
Okay.
Where they're asking for businesses to submit a 60-second pitch to pitch to Brett Wilson, who was coming to Metrotown for a CBC Live Day.
Brett, the ex-Dragons dinner.
Brett, the nice guy, ex-Dragons, yes. Unfortunately, he's no longer there.
Yeah, he was everybody's favorite. He was the nice guy.
Yeah, very good. Very good man. And essentially, they took the top three video contestants of that, brought them to CBC Metrotown Live, and forced them to pitch in front of, 400 or 500 people and Brett Wilson. And the winner of that then sort of had a bit of a back door into Dragon's Den.
Okay, and you won that competition.
I did win that competition.
And you have that video posted on your website, so that was a good moment, I imagine.
That was a great moment, Brett Wilson announcing that Adam from Chill Beds is the winner. Always, it's always great,
It was a good moment. So that then begins about a year-long journey to the actual taping to go to Toronto for that. How did that all come together?
Well, I still had to go through the audition process of going down, and I didn't have to wait in line, fortunately. I was kind of had a bit of a back door into the front door, waiting and not having to wait in line. So
okay.
I went down there, still auditioning in front of, you know, Tracy, who's the main producer for CBC. And, you know, you still wait for that phone call.
Okay.
Nothing's for sure, it seems, right? So
okay.
You're still waiting for that phone call that says, yes, we are, you know, you are coming to Toronto and you are going to be pitching in front of the Dragons. So, again, that was probably another month and a half. And that was probably in February of last year, 2011. So probably by March, I got a call, and then it was a question of scheduling a day to come to Toronto and actually pitch the Dragons.
Okay, so that all came together. You went to Toronto,
mm-hmm.
and they started locking you down at that point, where you cannot tell anybody what's going on.
That's
you
right.
can't leak anything. So they put the fear of God in you.
Essentially, they do. Yeah, I mean, see, Dragon's Den is like I believe it's the number one rated show in Canada.
Well, it should be. I think it's the best.
I thought it was
other than Dotto Tech.
That's right.
It would be second best.
And Hockey Night in Canada, which I think is
third best. Yes.
Right. So. Yeah, basically once you set that date, you liaison with a producer. They send you all the documents you're going to be signing once you get to Toronto, which is, you know, basically don't say this, don't say that. You can't say anything I couldn't say anything for a year pretty much, because
mm-hmm. yeah.
by the time I filmed in April 2011 and finally went to air February 2012.
Okay.
So it's a long time to sort of keep holding on to some of those stories. And
sit and wait, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got there to CBC. And they taped for several days. What was that process like? Having a background in TV, I can just imagine it was a hurry up and wait.
I think since I was there on the last day of shooting, I think they squished all the people in on Thursday and Friday. They wanted to leave early, so Thursday and Friday they just kind of moved everything up. We got in there for 10 o'clock instead of 11. You know, and once you get into the den or CBC Toronto, you're basically, you know, locked in a small room with 20 or 30 other people and various, you know, producers walking around making sure you're not going anywhere. And then you're just basically waiting for your turn.
Okay, so your turn came up. They called you in. You walked through those doors. Were you pretty nervous?
Actually, I wasn't. You know, being the CEO of the company, I know the product. I know what it's about. I know what the numbers are, what the figures are. So I basically
You've done your homework.
I did my
now,
homework.
Did you have any friends and people like role play with you and act like the Dragons and ask you the tough questions so that you were prepped for it?
People are continuing to offer, do you want to go through your pitch with me? I'm like, no, I don't need to go through my pitch with you. It's like, why? I'm going to go on in half an hour and you're looking to grill me again. It's like, well, I don't think so.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so I basically had four or five of my buddies from Toronto who came out and were involved in the pitch and were there representing a variety of different people in overheating laptop situations.
Okay.
So that was kind of fun. I mean, basically the gist of the program is it is a TV show.
Yeah.
And that's what they tell you, and they want to have
something.
They want
to make it entertaining.
That's right. So between having the mascot of Chill Man come on TV and basically saving laptops with the chill bed one at a time was kind of his theme, as well as handing them out to the Dragons. Yeah, it was a good pitch. I thought it was TV worthy. I had Kevin O'Leary playing my guitar. I was barding with Kevin. I was chatting with Bruce. There was a whole bunch of different, you know.
So you ended up with about 2 minutes of airtime in the show itself.
Mm-hmm.
We'll cut to the chase. They didn't offer you anybody.
That's right.
Yeah, you didn't get the deal. But you ended up with about 2 minutes of airtime, which isn't too bad,
Not bad for national TV.
And they didn't roast you, which is pretty good. They didn't mock you and tell you you were stupid and tell you to go back to something else, which is all good.
Right.
How long were you in studio? To do that 2 minutes of television?
Probably about 30 minutes.
Okay.
Seemed like 30 minutes. It could have been 40, it could have been 25. But
now, was there any point when you were in there that you thought, oh, I'm going to make it? And then was there any point when you realized that it was slipping away from you?
No. Once I realized that convincing the Dragons that laptops overheat and there's a huge million-dollar market for laptop stands, laptop cooling stands, which they didn't seem to know, that was probably the biggest challenge, was sort of going over that. And we spent a lot of time going, okay, laptops overheat, your CPU, your battery, all those things are basically generating heat in your laptop. And the fact that, you know, the inside of your computer is made of as much aluminum as possible. So I think, unfortunately, the Dragons, if they want to send an email, they just either do it on their phone or they tell someone to send an email for them. So
they weren't really down with the value proposition per se. They saw that it was a good product, but it was not something that caught their imagination.
Yeah, and the Dragons aren't necessarily supportive of Canadian companies in terms of if it's going to cost you $2 or $3 more to make it in Canada, they're going to go, yeah, okay, that's acceptable. For them, it's more like, how do we get our cost down to $3 or $4 by making them overseas?
Yeah, and they want to make real serious
money. That's right.
And you're building a kind of a community business. But the way I look at it is there's two reasons to go on Dragon's Den. One is to get the money, but I think that's the secondary reason. Mm-hmm. The big reason is you want to be on the big show. You want your product showcased.
Exactly.
And you ended up succeeding in that. So it was a successful trip.
I did. Yeah. They focused on the chill bed and described exactly what it does.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I also have the chill tab, which is a tabless den, which they neglected to...
which ultimately will be a bigger market.
For sure. Then that's what I thought going in there with the tabless den to complement the laptop stand. I thought was very apropos of the times and what's happening with the market, right? So.
Yeah.
And that's my bestseller as well. So it was kind of, it's like getting to the Super Bowl and losing.
But they
almost.
Didn't see, the problem was they didn't see any humor that they could find for television in your tablet stand, whereas they could make fun of
that's right.
preventing heat and radiation from reaching your nether region. So they made that quite funny. And, you know, if I was sitting up there, I'd do the same thing. I'd look for the humor, I'd look for pace, and I'd look for something that
right.
is television worthy, especially once they knew that they weren't going to be investing. They were still looking for something to capture the imagination.
Package protection.
Yeah, package
Kevin
protection.
Said, yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, you made it through it. You survived. And now, you know, you got more than 2 minutes on Dottotech. That's got to be good.
Well, that is going to be a highlight of 2012.
Is it? Is it going to be the highlight? Let's fill people out on where they can go if they want. You should have, if you've got a notebook and you're using it a lot, you should have a way to have it cooling down. And a good Canadian product, ChillBeds. You go to chillbeds.com. chillbeds.com. You can order them online. They're also available at several local retailers, so keep your eye open, but the website is the place to go. Adam, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Steve. Great talking to you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Art, we still have a giveaway on the website. Two giveaways on the website. People can drop by and visit and win cool stuff.
Are they winning tax stuff this week?
We're still giving away. It's our fourth. Yes, it's our fourth week of giving away copies of TurboTax.
I gotta talk to a tax guy.
How long has it been?
I don't want to say. Not on the radio.
Because the open media guys, you know, they can just petition your records to see. The government
okay.
actually knows how long it's been.
I'm
if you act, see the thing about taxes, Art, is you not mentioning it doesn't mean the government doesn't know.
Okay. Fair enough.
It's like, shh, they won't notice I haven't filed or paid.
Just covering my bases.
Well, the government knows. Trust me, that's one thing they know. They know they're like Santa Claus, who's been naughty and nice. The government has a list of who's paid and who hasn't. And regardless, we're all on one of those lists.
Great. Good to know. Moving on.
We are giving away a copy of TurboTax. And the other thing is, this is a great giveaway. We're giving away a Rogers LTE rocket stick. So we've got it. Actually, it's the one I'm using right here. It's going to be going out of my possession as soon as somebody wins it in a couple of weeks. It is a superb giveaway. Drop by our website. Of course, there we have podcasts of all of the back shows. We have different blog posts where we're writing different stories. Your opportunity to comment is there. You can sign up for our newsletter there. But you can also enter to win the rocket stick, which is a superb prize.
You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me on in studio now, Chris Gibson from London Drugs. Chris, you were down at the big Consumer Electronics Show last month, and smart TVs, I'm still kind of getting my head around where they fit. Did you take a look at the smart TVs?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I would say content was probably the biggest theme for CES this year.
It's all about content. Okay, yeah. So let's talk about what, because when we say the word smart TV, that's going to mean different things to different manufacturers, I think. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely, to some extent.
What's your take on the smart TV?
I think most of the manufacturers are actually getting a lot smarter with their smart TVs instead of varying degrees. And that's probably true from last year's models, that certain models will have varying degrees of how smart their smart TVs were.
Okay.
So certain popular portals were not available in all models.
Okay. So when we're talking smart TVs, to me, it seems that the manufacturers are integrating some online component, which is the word smart to them.
Yep.
And so we're seeing the social media side. They're trying to create some sort of community of interest around watching TV. So it's mainly Facebook and Twitter. Is mm-hmm. that what you were seeing?
No, what we were seeing was a lot deeper than that.
Okay, good.
And this year will be a real theme when looking for new panels, is how smart the smart TV is.
So what's a smarter TV got?
A smarter TV, the smartest TV will have their portal, which will offer the Facebook and the Twitter, so your social media feed, so you can be connected while you're watching TV. to runs the gamut, everything from Netflix to other different high def media server or media outlets like YouTube.
Okay.
So you can basically sit there and instead of surfing the internet on your lap and having your TV there and watching TV, you're doing it all on one device.
You're doing it on the device.
Okay. Certain manufacturers, most manufacturers actually even have a app that you can download to your Android or iPhone or iPad.
Yeah.
That you can actually control the smart media. You have a keyboard that links into your TV. So rather than trying to type with your remote, okay, you can actually type with your iPad or your Android tablet.
Are these TVs going to be flexible as far as how we tap into the technology? Here's where I'm going on this. I'm not sure that I want part of my screen real estate taken up with navigation if I'm watching a video. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that I like the idea of having, you know, a Facebook feed or a series of a YouTube channel of upcoming videos,
yep,
in the right-hand side or left-hand side of the screen while I'm doing it and then navigating through it. I have gotten to the point where having an iPad now for well over a year,
mm-hmm,
I am consuming my television as a two-screen process where my iPad is in my lap and the TV is on. And when it's boring TV or when I'm looking for ancillary information, I'm on my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is they've got to tie that process together where my iPad knows what I'm watching on TV and then starts driving content to my iPad. Did we see that?
We're getting there.
We're getting there. We're not there yet, though.
There are a few manufacturers that have that, and we're testing it. I haven't seen it in any of the new lineup, but, I mean, all of that is controlled with software, so it's not to say that it can't happen. Even if you buy it, it's future-proof because it's a software update.
Okay.
To have that, if you're looking for one that can be controlled with an app,
mm-hmm,
then, yeah, that's all definitely something to come.
Okay, so we've got the one way happening where my iPad or my smartphone or my Android phone can control my TV, can act as a,
yep,
glorified universal remote that has extra capabilities.
Yep.
But we don't necessarily yet quite have the TV talking back to the iPad and merging the content.
No, because right now the manufacturer is trying to get a handle of what content is out there.
Okay.
I mean, they've got people are making their choices of what they're watching for on-demand content. They've got Netflix. Most of the television providers will provide on-demand content. So, mm-hmm, if you have TELUS, Optik, or Shaw, you'll get on-demand content through them as well.
Yeah.
And the TV manufacturers are also providing their own on-demand content. So if you have a Sony TV, for example, you can tap into the Sony Entertainment Network.
Okay.
And download movies from the Sony Entertainment Network or rent movies from the Sony Entertainment
Network. Okay. So that's an interesting relationship that they have. Is, I get a sense that Samsung is one of the real leaders in figuring things out. Are they the ones to watch?
They are the ones to watch in who they get the content from. One thing that Samsung did last year, actually, which was very cool, was they just had an open browser. Most of the TV companies will have last year locked down. This year, you're starting to see more of that, where you have an open browser, where you're done with TV, you just want to surf the web, you can do that on your TV now.
Wow.
As an option. So something comes down the road, say you want to watch a Vimeo video, you can actually just browse to it through your browser on your TV.
That's a big monitor.
Absolutely.
That's a really big monitor. Chris, thanks for your time. Chris Gibson from London Drugs. Art, I am increasingly concerned about this Bill C-30. I don't understand how people who are raised in the same culture as I've been raised think this is okay.
Well, I don't know, because it's always the people who are pushing it are the ones that have a secret to hide, and eventually that secret's going to get out.
And this Vic Taves is a prime example. He's had his issues in the past, which the online community is going to town with.
Oh, right.
Yes.
His marital issues.
Yes, several times. It seems that you can teach an old dog old tricks. He seems to make the same mistake several times consecutively. But at any rate, we will have all of the links so people can enter. I mean, just look for openmedia.ca and all of the story, all of the details on Bill C-30 are listed out there. But we will have links on our site at dottotech.com. For you to follow. Hey, we've got some cool stuff lined up next week. I'm kind of proud of this one. We've got Mary M. Waddington coming on the show. She is the director of Computers for Schools.
Oh.
In this province, we have done a superb job of recycling computers from the private sector into our education system. They recently donated their 120,000th computer into the education system in this province. They've done a superb job over the past, 15 or so years. A big support from the TELUS pioneers on them in the past. And Miriam Waddington is going to be joining us to talk about the success of Computers for Schools in BC. It's as bad as the Bill C-30 story is, this is a good story. So you're going to want to tune in next week to hear that. On behalf of Art Factora, I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.